Just before the feast, Mr. Mickelson emailed me letting me know that he was considering having me do a sermon to introduce the new Deuteronomy 6 United Youth Instruction Program that's being implemented by the church. The fundamental concept underlying the program is that we are all responsible for understanding God's way and keeping His commandments. As it says in Deuteronomy 6, verses 5 and 6, you shall love the Lord, your God, with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might. And these words which I command you shall be in your heart. The responsibility for everyone is to love God with our whole heart, soul, and might, and the commandments of God should be in our hearts. God expects us to internalize His love and laws into our hearts. And then in verse 7 it says, you shall teach them diligently to your children, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. Now, other verses talk about the grandparents also being involved in that. God commands that we teach our children to do the same as what we just read in verses 5 and 6, to love God with our whole heart. Notice the sequence is that you love God and the commandments, that you love God and the commandments be in your heart, and then you teach them diligently to your children. The new Deuteronomy 6 United Youth Instruction Program is based on the guidelines laid out in verses for parents to be primary teachers of their children. The desire is that parents' first program concept will become a part of our church culture. When I first read of this program back July 31st e-news, it struck me as rather exciting. I was impressed and excited about the program. I went ahead and I listened to the archive recordings of the presentation by Mr. Randy and Kay Schreiber from General Council of Elders last spring as they laid out the program concepts. As I watched their presentation and read more, I saw a correlation between what was being proposed and the development of the program with what I've actually witnessed over the years in the United Youth Camps programs. The youth camp programs are patterned after the scriptural instruction to learn what God instructs and apply those instructions as we live the experiences of life. I gave a sermonette in September where I recommended the family education tab on the members.ucg.org site, where the church is making resources available specifically oriented toward Bible study aids for parents to utilize. The new youth instruction program can be found under that tab. Notice, the material on that website is on the website, and therefore it's available also for our children to access. If you are watching the news, I think most of us have noticed what seems like a concerted attack in our society on the family. I think a studied observation of the times we are in demonstrates that the peace, safety, and freedoms of religion, thought, and practices that we have been enjoying for decades are increasingly being threatened. Our society is increasingly becoming hostile toward God's instructions and anyone that practices and teaches God's way. Our children need to actually be well informed. We have an obligation. On the way to the Feast of Trumpets this year, the Wisconsin Dells, Sandy and I spent a couple of days in Chicago. And when we were in Chicago, we had an opportunity to go to do some of the tours of the city. And Chicago is actually rather spectacular, in my opinion. We saw a lot of buildings. And we went up in the John Hancock Center, up on the observation deck, and we were able to look out over well, I guess Lake Michigan and also, you know, over Chicago, and there's a Chicago River there. It was beautiful. We also got to see the Trump Towers. And according to our tour guide, Donald Trump's plan had been to build the tallest building in Chicago. But after the 9/11, he modified his plan so that the tower would be taller than the tallest, not be taller. He didn't want it to be taller than the tallest buildings in the hope that it would not become a target for terrorists. In my opinion, that building is very impressive. And according to Wikipedia, Mr. Trump had actually originally planned to make it a 2,000-foot skyscraper. And he's one of two Wikipedia reports, one of them said 2,000. One of them said that it was reported in the States here that it was going to be 1,500 feet. It was actually constructed to about 1,389 feet. And it's made it the second tallest building in 2009 in the Western Hemisphere. The largest, the tallest one was the Willis Center, which used to be the Sears Tower. We took a guided tour of the city, and the tour guide told us that this year, much to the chagrin of the city leaders, Mr. Trump put up a signs embossed the front of his building with a sign that said Trump. And these are big 20-foot high letters, embossed the building. Those letters were actually, I thought, were impressive. The building is impressive. Even his name emblazoned across the building, the front of the building, was impressive. I could not help but be impressed with the building. I was also impressed with the fact that there was no doubt about who was responsible for the building, and that he wanted me and everyone else to know. I was impressed and actually do respect his great accomplishment. As humans, most of us naturally want to leave a legacy of our lives. We want to leave a mark or a statement that we were here and that we made a difference. The program, the problem is that for most our legacies disappear and we are forgotten. Eventually, even the Trump Tower will decay and come down and be forgotten. When you look back into history, you see some great architectural wonders and engineering wonders of the ancient world. Very few, if any, know who conceived the projects or who engineered them or who constructed them. For example, the Great Pyramids of Egypt, or Stonehenge in England, or other great mysteries and wonders. People built those structures for a reason. Part of the reason was a legacy. So they had their accomplishment, so that they and their accomplishments would be remembered. The sad fact is that all of these edifices were subject to destruction. They deteriorate over time. Well, what is the long-term gain? What are we looking for? Let's turn to Psalms 49. Psalms 49. And I want to start in verse 1. Psalms 49, verse 1, beginning in verse 1. Hear this, all you peoples. Give ear, all you inhabitants of the world, both low and high, rich and poor. Together, my mouth shall speak wisdom, and the meditation of my heart shall bring understanding. And I want to skip down to verse 6. Those who trust in their wealth and boast in their multitude of riches, and down to 11, their inner thought is that their houses will continue forever, and their dwelling places to all generations. They call their lands after their own names. Nevertheless, man, though in honor, does not remain. He is like the beasts that perish. So even if we're honorable, even if we do great things, the end is we're going to perish. We're going to be gone. This is the way of those that are foolish, and their posterity who approve their sayings. And then down in 16, verse 16, Do not be afraid when one becomes rich, when the glory of his house is increased. For when he dies, he shall carry nothing away. His glory shall not descend after him. But while he lives, he blesses himself. For men will praise you when you do well for yourself. He shall go to the generation of his fathers, and they shall never see the light. A man who is in honor yet does not understand is like the beast to perish. So even though we become wealthy, even though we do great things, when we're dead, we're gone, it's over. It doesn't matter. We don't carry that wealth to the kingdom. That is not what we're carrying, the fact that we became wealthy or did well in business. Let's turn over to 2 Peter. And we want to turn to chapter 3. And I want to start in verse 10. But the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in which the heavens will pass away with a great noise, and the elements will melt with fervent heat. Both the earth and the works that are in it will all be burned up. Therefore, since all these things will be dissolved, what manner of person ought you to be in holy conduct and godliness? So what is important? What is important that we build for the future? The true future, enduring value, is a spiritual future that is available to us. Only through our salvation and the Spirit do we have any potential legacy in ourselves. When we die, memory of us is soon forgotten. Our only hope is in our own resurrection. And we have a legacy in our own resurrection. Let's turn to John chapter 6. John 6. John 6, and I want to read verse 27. Do not labor for food which perishes, but for the food which endures to everlasting life, which the Son of Man will give you, because God the Father has set his seal on him. Okay, our priority must be what brings about eternal life. And now let's turn back to Psalms 127. Psalms 127. And in 127, I want to start verse 1. Psalms 127, verse 1. Unless the Lord builds the house, they labor in vain who build it. Unless the Lord guards the city, the watchman stays awake in vain. It is vain for you to rise up early, to eat the bread of sorrow, for so he gives his beloved sleep. Behold, children are a heritage from the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward. Children are a heritage and a blessing. They are a physical blessing and a physical heritage. And they're also a spiritual heritage and a spiritual blessing. They have that potential. We hope our children will outlive us, and they will have children, and we will have physical descendants. And in verse 4, it says, do good. Oh, see, 127, be good. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior, so are the children of one's youth. Happy is the man who has his quiver full of them. They shall not be ashamed, but shall speak with their enemies in the gate. So children are a blessing. And we saw in Psalms 49 and 2 Peter that the legacy we are really hoping for is a spiritual legacy. Children and how we deal with our children is very important to God. Our responsibility is high, and we will be judged. What we do with our children will follow them and impact their children in turn. Be extremely careful. not to be cruel or inflict pain and suffering on our children without cause. The only legitimate cause that I can be aware of is for correction. If we do so, we are in danger of God's wrath against us. And let's look at the principle. I want to turn back to Exodus 22. Exodus 22. And this is a principle. Because it doesn't say specifically your children. But I want you to notice what God does say. And I think the principle does apply. And we're going to Exodus 22. And we'll start in verse 22. So Exodus 22, verse 22. You shall not afflict any widow or fatherless child. Well, don't afflict your own children either. If you afflict them in any way and they cry at all to me, I will surely hear their cry. And my wrath will become hot, and I will kill you with the sword. Your wives will be widows, and your children fatherless. So again, I think this applies in principle. We need to be careful how we treat widows and fatherless, but we also need to be careful in principle with what we do with our own children. We are actually not, and what to say in Ephesians, it says that we are not to provoke our children, and we're not to bring them, we're bringing them up and nurture them in the admonition of the Lord. And in Proverbs 17:6, it says, children's children are the crown of old men, and the glory of children is their father. Having children is an honor. With that honor, as I read in Deuteronomy 6:7, comes responsibility. What if you do not have children? What if you never marry and just never have children, or just never have children? Are you off the hook in the responsibility of teaching children? We just read that children are a blessing and a legacy. And if you are childless, what is your legacy? First, obviously, as we already have discussed and noted, you will be your own legacy. As a spirit being, you will exist forever into the future. But in addition, allow me to set forth an argument that you will not forever be childless. Let's turn to Galatians chapter 4. Galatians chapter 4, and I want to start in verse 26, Galatians 4, 26. But the Jerusalem above, that's not physical, that's a spiritual Jerusalem, is free, which is the mother of us all. So that's talking about the church. The church, we're going to be the spiritual Jerusalem. We're going to be the temple. In verse 7, it says, for it is written, rejoice, O barren, you who do not bear. Break forth and shout, you who are not in labor, for the desolate has many more children than she who has a husband. This quotes Isaiah 54 and verse 1. Here in Galatians, we see it as speaking of the church. You and I, all of us, as part of the body of Christ, will be having many children. Let's turn to 1 Corinthians 4. 1 Corinthians 4. Traditionally, it is understood that the Apostle Paul did not have children. And in 1 Corinthians 4 and verse 15, 1 Corinthians 4:15, it says, for though you might have 10,000 instructors in Christ, yet you do not have many fathers. For in Christ Jesus I have begotten you through the gospel. The Apostle Paul is claiming a legacy in those he had influenced. This is a spiritual legacy which is far more important than the physical. The value of the legacy we all have in our children is their potential to live forever into the future as spirit beings, part of the God family. The evidence here indicates to me the legacy will be our spiritual children, which may or may not be the children we conceived in this physical life. Our true legacy will in large part be those who influence and bring us to the truth. The truth here is highlighted in those three verses in Deuteronomy 6. So how is the Deuteronomy 6 program going to help us as parents, grandparents, and our extended family, the Church of God, us? The Deuteronomy 6 model is intended to be a resource for parents to use. The vision statement in the Deuteronomy Pastor's Handbook states, in part, Deuteronomy 6 clearly places the primary responsibility, and I'm quoting, supplying godly knowledge and understanding to our youth upon the parents. The Deuteronomy 6 project is intended to support and assist parents with the moral and spiritual development of their children and involve the entire church in the process. In their model overview, they list three statements under the purpose. Youth instruction responsibility belongs to the parents and begins in the home. Youth instruction includes all children from birth until they leave home. And youth instruction is supported and reinforced in our church programs and literature and culture, excuse me. And under the parents, they state, shift responsibility for teaching about God to the parents 24/7. It is not just at church, at Sabbath school. Parents are responsible for teaching their own children about God and his principles. And then they list some categories here, and it says, parents can teach in the moment. Biblical principles are most effectively taught in the moment as life happens. Now, I can remember many times while raising my kids when situations would come up that were real hands-on crises. Moments when I would actually have to prayerfully teach and advise my children. When situations come up, use your own understanding of the Bible with what you have observed and experienced in life to help your children make proper decisions. So we take our experiences and our knowledge of the Bible and teach that to our children so that they have experiences and knowledge, biblical knowledge, so that they can make decisions and then they can teach their children. This is an ongoing process. Parents know their own children and how, and this is point number two here, parents know their own children and how they can learn best. Now, as a child, one of the ways I learned best was by reading. Some of my kids learn best by hands-on activities. Some of them like discussions. Some of them, you know, just like to discuss different topics. Parents can teach their own children. This is again a quote and third point. Parents can teach to their own children's grade or knowledge level. And then family, fourth point, family studies can tie concepts. And in my comment, in addition to the studies tying concepts, family studies also tie the family together. In a seminar given this year by Dr. Keith Tomes, he cited a paper published by the Search Institute.org titled Discovering What Kids Need to Succeed. And he listed 40 developmental assets for adolescents. Items at the top of the list were family support and positive family communication. And continuing the quote from the pastor's paper for the local congregation, they state, the United Church of God's current initiative is to provide a positive environment for growth. All members of the congregation can help to do this. The material is organized by topics of study. For example, the 2014-2015 topic is Making God Real. And in that study guide, and I'm going to quote from the study guide now, and that's available to all of us. Mr. Mickelson gave me his copy of the pastor's information so that I'd have information, but this is available to all of us. And to quote, it says, which begins a study into, speaking of this program, it says, which begins a study into the doctrines of God and fundamental beliefs of United Church of God. And that's the family study guides, and that's a quote. And then it says under objectives, these family study guides are written so that parents can first study into the topic and have a good understanding of the basic teachings. Then parents can teach and discuss the topics with their children at whatever age and knowledge levels they are. These guides were not created as grade level lessons, and I think this is important, because each family teaches to the level of their own children. They're giving you information, they're laying it out in a format and a structure, so it's easy for you to look at, but you're going to be responsible for making sure that it gets to your children in a way that they understand. And continuing the quote, the guides can be used with children of any age and for teen studies. The program is a tool for us to use. The primary responsibility of instructing children is the parents. The program and the rest of us are here to help. In order for the rest of us to help, the hope is that we will try to keep ourselves, and we all need to keep ourselves informed. The month of November is the first month of the Family Study Guide. Take the time to access the website, and it's members.ucg.org. Go to the Family Education tab at the top of the page. When you run the mouse over the tab, a drop-down box will appear with a list of options. The top option is Youth Instruction. Run your mouse over the Youth Instruction box, and another drop-down box will appear with three options. And those three options are Family Study Guides, Family Education Newsletter, and then Instruction Strategies. The Instruction Strategies right now is under construction, so it has not been completed yet. The Family Education Newsletters are these right here. There's two of them so far, Family Education Newsletters. And the volume one for 2014 was, How Do I Talk to My Kids About God? And then it gives you information and tips on how to do, what things to do with to help your kids. And then it gives you some scriptures and some possible questions here. And then the second one that they have here is, How Do I Train My Child's Heart? And again, they have a pastor's note, and they have information here that can be useful for you as you start putting this together and utilizing this information for your children. Okay, so if you go into the Family Studies Guide, the Family Study Guide, the page will look something like this. And from there, for November, they have the topic, and for November here, it's Making God Real. And does God exist? Where is God? And then they have a session that they've already outlined, so we know for the next 6 months what's going to be coming up. But then they have links and download Making God Real, Part 1. And then they have download Make God Real, Part 1 Bible Trivia. Now, the Part 1, the download that actually goes through the course material and the outline is right here. And on their objectives, it says, help your explain, this is what the objectives of this program is, this month's. Help your children explain how we know God exists and is real to us. And number two, help your children to picture where God is. And number three, help your children describe how God is everywhere. And then it goes through and it lists out questions and topics. It gives you scriptures to look up. gives you comments and different things to bring up and discuss with your children, and they have basically three categories. And in the back, next page over, it gives you checkpoints or questions that you as a parent might want to go over. You might want to take there's a multiple choice questions here. Take it, see how you do. And that's just for your own. Nobody looks at that, you know, unless you let your kids look at it. But, you know, maybe you have your kids take the test. But it's just so that you look and say, well, how am I doing? You know, did I get it? Okay. And then down here on the bottom, it's got additional resources you can use for family studies. And they've got here a fundamental beliefs booklet. They have sermons. They've got articles in the Good News magazines. Who is God booklet. So they're giving you resources so that as a parent, you're able to go out there and find what you need in order to be able to help your children. And if your older children, if you can read and your children can have access, send them out there to do it. You know, they can do those things. And then there's additional notes, instructor notes, and things to discuss, questions. And in the Bible trivia link, and this will be a Bible trivia, my understanding, for each month. They've got interesting things that give you things to discuss with your kids. For example, name the Ten Commandments. What are some of the things that God has created? You know, they've got sun, stars, animals, birds, things to discuss with your kids. Now again, see, these are age-oriented, okay? With Savannah and Siri, my grandchildren, you know, they're not going to be discussing some in-depth nuclear physics, but they can discuss the sun and the stars. They can say God made these things, okay? And, you know, they can, some of them, now my oldest granddaughter there could probably start learning the commandments. And there's been a lot of research that says that actually from birth, our children are learning an immense amount of information. So even the young gal, Linnea, that was had the blessing today, she's also in the process and needs to be learning. And so if you need to ask for help, you ask. If you need help making the knowledge base in the study guide appropriate for your family, ask for help. Our Sabbath school teachers might be able to help. They have years of experience making our Sabbath school enjoyable and profitable for our children. I know some of the kids eagerly anticipate coming here to church, largely because they have the opportunity of going back to that Sabbath school. I've even heard of some of the kids shedding tears because they're not able to participate because they get canceled one reason or another. Our Sabbath school instructors have actually developed this program so that it is fun for our children. It's not just a lecture, it's age appropriate. And our Sabbath school teachers will continue to assess the needs of our children and teach their lessons accordingly. They may or may not be on the same schedule or even teaching the same resource material that's on this program. Remember, the Deuteronomy 6 program is for the parents. Our teachers will teach based on their years of experience and the needs of the children they are teaching. They regularly adjust programs to fit the needs of our children. And I know they do that. It's amazing, and it's very much appreciated. What is being introduced here today is a tool that we hope will be used as an additional resource as we all fulfill our God-given obligation to our children and the children of the congregation. The Deuteronomy 6 program is not intended to replace you or your judgment. Do not think that this program, Sabbath school, Bible studies, church messages, or any other programs offered by others can ever relieve us as parents or grandparents of our responsibility. Children, the intention of this program is for your benefit. Utilize this program and all the resources available. It is for your benefit. Let's turn to Proverbs 23. Proverbs 23. Who is ultimately responsible for your child's salvation? Proverbs 23, and I want to start in verse 15. My son, if your heart is wise, my heart will rejoice. Indeed, I myself. Yes, my inmost being will rejoice when your lips speak right things. When our children at any age do what is right and do well, normal parents are pleased and feel a wonderful sense of satisfaction. And in verse 17 it says, do not let your heart envy sinners, but be zealous for the fear of the Lord all the day. For surely there is a hereafter, so there's something beyond this life, and your hope will not be cut off. Hear, my son, and be wise, and guide your heart in the way. Do not mix with winebibbers or with gluttonous eaters of meat, for the drunkard and the glutton will come to poverty, and drowsiness will clothe a man with rags. Listen to your father, who begot you, and do not despise the mother when she is old. Each person is responsible for their own salvation. Lack of knowledge does not protect us from our choices. In Hosea 4, God says, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Children, if others that have responsibility to assist you fail their responsibility, you are still responsible for your own salvation. You are responsible to make sure you love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and might. God's commandments must be in your heart. You must prepare yourself to take on adult responsibilities when you become an adult. And we see from Deuteronomy 6 that parents are responsible for the education of their children. From nature, common sense, we know that parents are also responsible for the care and safety of their children. In 1 Timothy 5:8, it says, but if anyone does not provide for his own, and especially for those of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. Let's turn to Ezekiel 33. Ezekiel 33. When a parent has a child, until that child is an adult and leaves home, that parent is responsible for the health and welfare of that child. Part of that is providing food and shelter. In addition, parents are responsible for the protection of their children. With that in mind, I want to read the first six verses of Ezekiel 33. Now, I realize this does not speak specifically of a parent-child relationship, but the principle does. So in verses 33, and we're going to start with 1, again, the word of the Lord came to me saying, son of man, speak to the children of your people and say to them, when I bring the sword upon the land, and the people of the land take a man from their territory and make him their watchman. Okay, I want to stop there. When he speaks of the sword on the land, consider the sword as danger. Let's do a contrast and comparison here. In the context of our discussion here of parents and children, the sword can represent danger. We can think of the watchman as fulfilling the same role as a parent, watching out for the safety and well-being of their family. We can compare the people of the land selecting the watchmen to adults determining to have and take care of their own children and taking on that responsibility of being a parent. And then let's consider the trumpet as a warning or instruction as a parent. As parents, we are supposed to warn and instruct and teach our children. So let's read on with some of these thoughts in our mind. When he sees the sword coming upon the land, in other words, when you see danger, If he blows the trumpet and warns the people, in other words, this is the watchman, the parent. So if you, as a parent, see danger, see things that we should be being watched for, you should be letting your children know. In other words, you warn them. Blow the trumpet. Blow the warning. Say the warning. Explain to them. Then whoever hears the sound of the trumpet and does not take warning, if the sword comes and takes him away, his blood shall be on his own head. In other words, if your children do not listen, if your children will not listen, if they will only rebel, if you've done your part, if you've taught them, and they reject that, it's on their head. You've done what you were supposed to do, and you've done what God has instructed you to do, and that you've taught your children. He heard the sound of the trumpet, but did not take the warning. His blood shall be upon himself. But he who takes warning will save his life. And what does it say in the commandments? Honor your father and mother, that your life may be long. But if the watchman sees the sword coming, in other words, the parent, does not warn his children, and does not blow the trumpet, and the people are not warned, and the sword comes and takes any person from among them, he is taken away in his iniquity, but his blood will I require at the watchman's hand. So as parents, we have, if we want to run this analogy, okay, and I think the analogy does apply, and if the watchman, as parents, we're going to be held accountable and responsible if we don't do our job. If we do our job and the kids rebel and leave and reject, it's on their head. But if we don't do our job, they're probably going to not go well for them anyway, but we're supposed to do our job. And as I mentioned, they still have some responsibility, but the primary responsibility for the parents, for the warning is to us as parents. And in verse 7, let me check my notes here. The first six verses relate to the parents' responsibility to provide for their children protection and to instruct them so that they can protect themselves. We want our children to be able to take care of things themselves. As you can see, we are talking principle here. In verse 7, we see that God is choosing the watchman. When we become parents, we saw in Deuteronomy 6, verse 7, that God gives responsibility to the parents. In other words, God chooses the parents to take care of the job. He chooses the watchman. He chooses the parents. He chooses to give them that responsibility. Here we see in principle that God will hold them accountable for how well they perform their obligation. Let's continue in verse 7. So, you son of man, I have made you a watchman for the house of Israel. Therefore you shall hear from my mouth and warn them for me. When I say to the wicked, now the wicked can be ignorant. Okay? If you're not following God's laws, if you're not being sanctified by God, then, you know, you're not under God's grace and mercy, and you're not, and don't have righteousness imputed to you. So we can draw an analogy between wicked children, in other words, uneducated, uninformed, unbaptized, people. Well, I guess I wouldn't necessarily say unbaptized about our children, but you know, the point is these are they have not had righteousness imputed to them. So, nevertheless, lost my place. When I say to the wicked, O wicked man, you shall surely die, and you do not speak to warn the wicked from his ways, that wicked man shall die in his iniquity, but his blood I will require at your hand. This is basically a repeat. So again, if we don't warn, if we don't teach our kids so that they put away wickedness, they put away rebellion, that they are taught to follow and internalize God's love into their hearts. That's what we need to be doing. So if they fail to do that, if we fail to even try, then it's on our head. Nevertheless, if you warn the wicked to turn from his way, and he does not turn from his way, he shall die in his iniquity, but you have delivered your soul. In other words, do your job. That's what a God is all is asking, is that we put forth the effort. Therefore, O Son of Man, say to the house of Israel, thus you say, if our transgressions and our sins lie upon us, and we pine away in them, how can we then live? Say to them, as I live, says the Lord God, I have no pleasure in the death of the wicked, but that the wicked turn from his way and live. Turn. Turn from your evil ways, for why should you die, O house of Israel? And again, here's talking about the house of Israel, but I think in an analogy, we can bring that back and say, look, this relates to the same principle, the same obligation relates to the parents and that obligation and to our children. When I look at this, Deuteronomy 6 program, my immediate thought is that it's just too big. And I kind of wonder what kind of advice I could give that would be of help. I think it's going to depend a lot on the age of your children. I think at a bare minimum, this material is great for personal Bible study. With the resources, you can delve into a topic as much as you want or have time for. Determine what will work for you and your family, and set up a schedule or a plan to make it work. You're the parents, you decide. I think what you do as a structured program of your own design will work and have great and have great utility. I think the biggest thing you will find that is most effective is just spending time with your children and relating to them on an ongoing basis. Let's turn to Deuteronomy 11. Deuteronomy 11. Deuteronomy 11, and I want to start in 18 and read through verse 21. Therefore, you shall lay up these words of mine in your heart and in your soul, and bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall teach them to your children, speaking of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. And you shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates, that your days and the days of your children may be multiplied in the land of which the Lord swore to your fathers to give them, like the days of the heavens above the earth. In order for this to work, we must be spending time with our children. Actually, you must be building a relationship with your children. Mothers and fathers go about building relationships with their children in different ways. Way back before my wife and I had children, I was attending school at Eastern Washington University, and I remember our pastor, Roger Foster at the time, was also taking a class there at EWU, and one of the classes that he was taking was concerning the brain. And I remember him explaining to us an aspect of what he had learned. As part of that class, he learned some of the differences between male and female brains and how each develops relationships. According to him, girls tend to develop relationships based on who. If you watch young girls play, they tend to form cliques, where the relationships are based on who is in the clique, who's in the group. Their friendships are based on if they like you or not. Boys, a little different. Boys do not tend to build relationships so much on who, but rather what is important to boys. It is important to boys, what are we doing? When boys start hanging out with each other, it is usually based on what they like to do. If boys are playing a game or a sport, even though they may not initially much care for the other boys, if they're having fun and spend time together, they will build a relationship. They will be fine because they are doing something together that they like. Boys bond typically because of what we do together. Let's turn to Genesis 25. I want to show you an example here what I think illustrates this. So, and I think it illustrates what Mr. Foster was explaining. And in verse 28 of chapter 25, Genesis 25, 28, it said, "And Isaac loved Esau because he ate his game. But Rebekah loved Jacob." Isaac loved Esau because of what they did together. Isaac ate Esau's game. They had a relationship based upon what they did together. Isaac liked the food, and he enjoyed the time eating the food and sharing with Isaac. Rebekah, it says, loved Jacob. She loved Jacob because they were, the way the story plays out looks to me like Jacob was just her favorite. She had a favorite. And it does not explain why, but Isaac loved Esau because he ate of his game. Now, the way I internalized and used that information, and I implemented that information and consciously did so in raising my children, what I did was I tried to find something that my children and I could do together. I realized that they bonded with their mother because they were that with their mother. But for me to bond, I had to be doing something with them. What does it say in Deuteronomy 11? "You shall teach them to your children, speaking of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up." In other words, whenever you are doing anything, watch for and take advantage of the potential moment for teaching. When you are spending time with your children and others, take care about how you portray the church, how you portray the people in the church in your comments. Often when you're spending time with your children and observing life events with your children, you will note the mistakes of others. Usually the intent is to help your child see the folly of the other person so they will learn to avoid the same mistake. When do we do that? When we do that, take care not to condemn or mock the person you are using to teach your child. Remember, we all make mistakes and do stupid things, either out of ignorance or just foolishness. Your children over time will see and develop their own opinions of your behavior and your decisions. And if you've taught them that if people make mistakes, you mock them or cut them, and if you've taught them to cut them off as far as being friends and having relationships, I think you can imagine what you're going to have. Especially people in the church. Remember, they have a special relationship with God. They are friends of God. They are children of God. And we do not want to put ourselves in a position by insinuation of mocking God or by insinuation mocking His church. If you have a habit of mocking or condemning others and avoiding association with members of the church, you may find your own children develop the same habit. You want to be careful that your own children do not reject you. You don't want them to reject you. You don't want them to reject God's way. You don't want them to reject the church because they have observed some sort of hypocrisy, or what they in their minds think is a hypocrisy in what you say or do. Remember the adage, condemn the sin, not the sinner. Take care to emphasize benefits of being here in the church. The privilege of our being called into the church is so wonderful. I remember a close friend, and he's still a friend in the church, commenting to me about how fortunate he felt to be here, if for no other reason than for the natural blessings that come from following God's way and having his family learn and follow that way. The man is converted, and he still continues to serve vigorously in the church. But I thought the comment was interesting, because sometimes I have heard comments like, how unfortunate it is that our children are different and have to avoid things like Easter or Halloween or Christmas or other events in school. For some, Friday night sports and other school activities have been a concern. We need to be careful to emphasize to our children the benefits of following this way, which I can argue are better than Christmas, better than Easter or Halloween. We get to take time off and travel each year to wonderful places for the feast. We have opportunity to have friendships with people from all walks of life and areas all over the world. We are not limited by superstition. God focuses our attention on morality and kindness to others. We try to foster and develop kindness in our children. School activities only last until you are out of school. Learning God's way of peace and happiness, if applied, can last a lifetime and beyond. We have the advantage of being taught the importance of family, of God's laws, and the importance of doing what is right. Stability and reliability are fruits of God's way. I think this program, which is being introduced this month throughout the church, can and will have significant impact on each of us and our children. The program is designed to help us in our relationships with God, our families, and particularly arming all of us as we face obvious challenges coming ahead. We are to instill into our hearts everything there is to know about God, how he thinks, what his expectations are, and internalize them into our hearts so we can think like God. In addition, God commands that we teach and prepare our children to do the same. Let's turn to 2 Timothy. 2 Timothy. And I want to 2 Timothy 3. 2 Timothy 3 and verse 14. But you must continue in the 2 Timothy 3:14, but you must continue in the things which you have learned and been assured of, knowing from whom you have learned them, and that from childhood you have known the Holy Scriptures, which are able to make you wise for salvation through faith, which is in Jesus Christ. From childhood, somebody spent the time to teach him. We need to be spending the time to be teaching our children. God's way does work. As we see from Deuteronomy 6, we must learn God's way, live God's way, and we also need to teach God's way to our children.